Hi, this is David Howard Thornton, but you might know me as Art the Clown from the movie Terrifier, and you're listening to the Night of the Living Dreads podcast. Kill you later.
Anybody recognize this voice? It's been about a week. This is Otis B. Dreads in the Night of the Living Dreads podcast here in the insane asylum. Got Mrs. Dreads here with me. Mrs. Dreads, how are you in this heat? It is hotter than shit here in the, not just in the insane asylum, but I mean
it's
up
hot
here.
Outside.
Yeah, it's hot as hell upside. Outside, and I swear, I have not even been drinking.
It's 88 degrees out there.
But the humidity is that's what sucks. That's what sucks. As some may know, you know, I've recently quit smoking. Cigarettes. That is.
Six weeks.
Yeah. And what's the name of this one? I'm still smoking the good stuff, though.
Yellow Springer.
That's right. This episode is brought to you by Yellow Springer. From Pure Ohio Wellness. This is the Night of Living Dreads podcast, episode 73. I don't know if I mentioned that or not.
Nope.
But yes, episode 73. You can check out all the previous 72 episodes if you dare. over there, Night of the Living Dreads, Dreads with no A for any new listeners that may have found us. And nightoftheLivingDreads.com. You can catch us over there on Spotify, on Stitcher, and also posted over there at Night of the Living Dreads on Facebook. Got a group and got a page. Join the group so you can interact. I'm kind of stupid when it comes to Facebook sometimes, and when I started the page, I thought that was something that everybody, you know, that joined could get involved with and you know, do all. Nope, that's the group, dumbass. Mm-hmm. That's what you need the group for. But we got both, and we post on both. So every time a new episode drops, you can catch it on the website, Spotify, Stitcher, and over there at the Facebook page.
Yep.
We got a, this is actually going to be, I think, a really fun show. We got something that, to me, is absolutely horrifying that we're going to talk about first, and then we're going to take a slight, brief, very brief intermission, and we're going to end the show with a suggestion. By either one of the members. I'm not sure how much good old Chad Gann, some may know him from over there at the Gorehounds of Horror, that group over there, another horror-based Facebook group. Check them out. I put up a poll, got some suggestions on a particular serial killer to talk about, and I don't want to, you know, give his name away quite yet, although if you participate in the poll, you already know who the fuck it is.
Yeah, I guess you posted it on Facebook.
Yes, I did. but we're going to end the show with that. Thank you again, Chad, for the suggestion. I've dove more into this guy than I had in the past, and I think it's going to be a pretty interesting conversation we're going to have, Mrs. Dreads.
Yeah, he's interesting.
He is. As I think a lot of serial killers are, but this guy, well, we'll get into that here in just a few minutes, because I, for anybody that knows, hate fucking snakes. I'm absolutely terrified of snakes. Now, what else could 2020, the year 2020, bring us than scientists and researchers at Virginia Tech University have finally figured out why a species of flying snakes. Yep. Let that fucking set in. Let that sink in real quick. Flying snakes, which are native to Asia. Yeah. Okay. I'm still, no, I'll get into it. And how they wriggle their bodies when they glide through the air. This isn't like flying like a fucking bird, okay?
Bat with wings.
Oh, God.
About a snake with wings.
Snake a bat. Night. Bats do have wings, Mrs. Dreads. You failed science, didn't you? No? All right. okay, that to me, first off, because I got a little clip to where, because this clip right here, it's only about, you know, three minutes or so, I think, will explain this better than I could. Now, you'll probably hear me and Mrs. Dreads cut in a few, you know, times during this clip, because it blows my mind. I'm terrified of snakes on the ground. Now you're showing me science and research being done. I know, man, you'd think I was drinking. Research that has been done probably right now,
yep,
as we speak, trying to figure out how snakes glide through the air. Let's listen to a little bit of this. This is unbelievable.
I have been studying flying snakes for over 20 years.
All right, see, already 20 years, this kind, just let that, that just blows my mind.
Well, that means that they've been around for 20 years that we didn't know about.
Right, that snakes can actually do this.
Yeah, it's a species of snake.
Some of these are not that particular snake. Now, this video may not be, you know, the best thing to play. It doesn't translate well, you know, through your speakers.
Not
but
all snakes can fly.
Well, I'm going to mute you real quick. Yeah, let's listen to some more of this.
And the reason that I find them so interesting
is because
the snake is perhaps the least obvious animal that should be able to fly through the air.
It's thought that these snakes take to the air to avoid predators. But Jake Soha has a lot of questions about this unusual behavior.
Yeah, I do
One
too.
One of the most basic and important questions that we have had is, why does the snake undulate in the air? It's this very striking motion that looks like it's swimming in the air.
Yeah. All right. What it basically is, we call it, us laymans who haven't been studying snakes or even flying fucking snakes for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What it is, it's basically slithering. Is kind of how what we
like.
Will call it. It looks like these snakes are, they jump out of trees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
and then they slither through the air. And it looks like they are in the water. It is absolutely ridiculous how fucking, you know, these, I don't know. I can't get over it. But that's what they, you guys, for the layman, if you don't know what undulating means, that's what it means. It's basically a fancy way of saying slithering.
Yeah.
Through the air, which causes them to become aerodynamic and glide versus, you know, slither off a
right.
branch and fall straight down. This is
I mean, because they, like, their body moves more when they're doing that. It's not
right
when they slither. It's
right. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's doing it, I think, almost more pronounced.
Yeah.
It's not just that little, you know, slither. That helps them go fast. This helps them fly through the fucking air.
Is it doing it because it's a snake?
It's doing
All
it because it's a
this?
Demon.
Or is there some underlying physical function?
Yeah,
of
it's
this
a demon.
Modulation?
Jake and his team have been working with Chrysopelea paradisi, the paradise tree snake.
So this is what a flying snake glide looks like. It flattens its body.
Yeah, I know this don't translate well. I'll put this
and
link.
It also undulates through the air.
There it goes, undulating
Isaac
again.
Isaac Newton helped set up an experiment to measure flying snake
undulation.
Yeah,
right. It kind of
to determine, it
kind of flattens his body. I don't know if we'll, you know, play the entire thing, but I probably should, because it is quite interesting. They hook these snakes up to
pieces of tape on them.
Right, and they're able to track this tape, kind of like how I think we see video games made. They put the suit on them. It's almost like a tracking device that tracks the movement of this snake.
Well, what it is however, whatever kind of camera they were using,
right.
When the snake would be in motion, the camera would catch the reflect, because it was reflector tape.
Reflector, right.
So it would catch the reflection off the tape and let them know
gives them all kind, yeah, it gives them all kind of analytics and stats on how this snake is moving and it's, I don't know, they'll kind of explain it a little bit right here. And I'm sorry for those you're probably thinking, why in the fuck is he going on and on about a snake for the first, you know, a flying snake in Asia? And you know, we're here in the States for the first 10 minutes of this show. There's good damn reason, because I'm terrified of snakes and flying
and
ones.
And it'll be coming to America near you.
Coming to a state near you, a city near you. It's the flying snakes tour.
Depending on what the snake is doing in the air, we have to measure points along its body. And in this study, to do that, we used a motion capture system.
So this
is the same system you'd see in a Hollywood movie. They'd put markers on a person and then track them in 3D space. So we did that exact same thing, except we placed markers on the snake.
Just
the
creepy.
Team took over a four-story black box theater. They covered the floor with foam and lifted the snake high into the air.
Oh my god.
We prepared to see our tree snakes, so they're more comfortable in trees and in branches. And so we had a branch for them to jump off of.
You imagine like a fucking anaconda or something?
flying
across over your head, you know?
Then it was just a matter of persuading the snake to show off for the cameras.
Sometimes the snakes were really interested in getting away from us.
They're getting some distance. Yeah. Again, I know this isn't translating very well.
Once the snake did take to the air, the pieces of tape on its back provided data to the motion caption cameras, allowing Jake and Isaac to create a 3D model of the snake's movement.
One takeaway from the study is that undulation increases the stability of flying snake glides. So in our model, what we did is
we need to decrease that shit.
Yeah, because now we know what the next crisis is going to be.
Flying snakes.
Without undulation, the simulated snake is still going to cover some horizontal distance, but what happens is it fails, and it fails by basically tumbling over.
The side-to-side undulation, as well as a previously undiscovered vertical movement, allow the snake to stay in an upright position, helping it glide safely to the ground.
Oh, this is so cool. I'm having nightmares for weeks.
Using undulation is completely unique to flying snakes. No other gliding creature maintains stability in it.
Just the term, flying snakes.
Yeah.
That should not be something that we're even discussing.
Not in the same sentence.
No. No. Just like this video started out by saying, you know, the reason it you know, intrigued this guy, and he studied him for 20 years, mm-hmm. is because snakes are not supposed to fucking fly.
Right.
They're not supposed to even glide. We don't think of snakes that way. We think of them at our feet, slithering by us, being creepy and evil like they are. Little Satan's penises.
Oh, my God.
Evil.
In this way. And this new mechanism for gliding could even be used in robotics.
There's already been inspiration for borrowing snake undulation and translating that into robots, and that's enabled.
Now, I know it's not what he said, but one could easily predict that maybe the next phase in this crazy year with COVID and fucking killer hornets and is robotic flying snakes.
That's what I just said.
No, he said they're turning them into they're using that movement, not necessarily a snake.
Right, but what, like I said, that's going to be our next crisis.
I know, and that's here they actually
to move
show
on sand or to swim or even move through really rough environments.
I swear.
So we think that potentially you could use what we found out about aerial undulation and translate that over into the snake robot to have a...
You're the devil, sir.
But for Jake Soha, the satisfaction is that another mystery of flying snakes has been solved.
I didn't know there were another... How many more mysteries are there about flying snakes?
What we now know is that the undulation is not something that the flying snakes are doing just because they're a snake. Instead, the undulation is critical to their ability to glide. So with it, they're a graceful glider. Without it, they're just another snake falling to the ground.
A good snake is a dead snake. All right. Yeah, this is, and this article came from upi.com. Just came out a couple days ago. Huh? The 30th.
Yesterday.
There's only 30 days in the last month. Okay. So this is something actually quite recent that's come out. How flying snakes glide swimming through the air. That is just downright fucking creepy. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Are you intrigued or are you absolutely terrified?
I'm not terrified.
I am. I think I made that abundantly clear. Why? I mean, what is there to be at ease about flying fucking snakes? I guess if you like snakes, a lot of you know people that may listen that like snakes, you know, men and you know women. They both like snakes. Right? Man, what? Otis, you're a pansy.
See, there's a title for a new movie.
You're a Nancy.
Night of the Flying Snakes.
Oh, I hate you. That was just mean-spirited, Jody. That's all that was. That was mean-spirited. I see how this is going to go. I think we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. Talk about Mr. Chad Gann's suggestion. We did a poll, let you guys decide. A lot of you guys voted. Thank you. And
good picks.
There were a lot of really good picks. I would have been interested in talking about any one of them, because they're all ones that have not been discussed here in the Insane Asylum. Because we've talked about a lot over the past year or so. Yes, all good picks, but Chad's pick of the Green River Killer,
yep.
Mr. Gary Leon Ridgway, that was the one that won out in the poll by quite a bit, I may add.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more people wanted to hear how bad we can brutalize this story. Those that know, I mean, maybe I should just throw it out there now. It could be some new listeners to the podcast, and they may be thinking that we're one of those podcasts that, you know, we just go balls to the wall, you know, 2-3-part episodes on the same topic. No, sir. No, ma'am. That is not us here in the Insane Asylum. What we do is we have some jokes. We talk about the, you know, all the, you know, that. I'd say the bullet points of the stories,
right.
and serial killers, and you know, whether it be true crime or just, you know, regular old serial killer. Just regular old. Yep.
You're everyday.
You're just everyday serial killer. But we don't go into, you know, I mean, like I said, we don't do 2- and 3-part shows on this. We just give you a brief, and, you know, if you haven't heard of this story... whoops. Oops. that backfired. That backfired. dong. Oh man, almost
sound like you're being gonged.
I know. The gong show. Right. The unknown comic. I'm the unknown podcast host. Hey, get off! Funny. Turn his mic off. Fucking done. We've heard enough.
That was shit. That was funny.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, at my expense. I'll take it. All right. Let's just
the expression on your face was priceless.
God, we're not on camera. All right, we'll be right back. If you're anything like me, you are a huge fan of true crime and dark humor merchandise. Otis B. Dredd's here to tell you about the best place to get all of your true crime and dark humor swag. That's right, True Crime 7. Dot store, true crime, spell out 7, SEVEN dot store, the only place you need to go for true crime and dark humor. I'm going to tell you what, this place has some really, the great prices, you can't beat their prices, 30-day money-back guarantee if you are not happy, and I guarantee you will be. Free shipping on orders, $75 and up, 24-hour online support. What kind of stuff can you get, Otis, you may be asking? You can get t-shirts, you can get hoodies, coffee mugs, cutting boards, posters, pillows. And if you search for them over there on Amazon, you can also check out their reading material. That's right, they publish books as well. Stay up to date with all the new merchandise and great deals on all their products. Follow them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, sign up for their newsletter and get all the latest info about new products. Tell you what, you are not going to regret going to TrueCrime7.store, and at the checkout, don't forget promo code NLD to get you a 10% discount on your entire order. That's right, TrueCrime7, SEBEN.store. Tell them Otis sent you. And remember, stay curious, keep it creepy, and don't get murdered. Boy, I hope we don't get sued. I don't think people care about us enough to sue us. Wondering if his rope's still wagging from the tree. Sing it, Joey.
I want it. I don't know the words.
That's right, the Green River Killer. I don't think CCR really listens to this podcast.
I would hope not. I mean, it'd be pretty cool if they did. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, that'd be kind of cool. But our buddy Bobby suggested throwing this in there. And
that fits.
I thought it was funny. I mean, I don't think it may not even have anything to do with it. It may not even be the same fucking Green River.
It still fits?
I think it does. So the Green River we're talking about is in Seattle.
Yep.
And again, we are talking about Gary Leon Ridgway, born 1949, still alive and kicking down in Washington State Penitentiary, Walla Walla, Washington.
Yep.
And that's just fun to say. Walla Walla. Walla 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 Walla,
Washington.
Sounds
like Pac-Man.
I know, right? Yeah, he's still kicking, 71 years old. And what an interesting character he is.
Yeah.
He, and I'd been thinking about this all week leading up to this podcast, that when you think, when you tell somebody, and sometimes even, you know, someone who is, you know, interested in, you know, studying and researching about serial killers and watching documentaries about them, just has that interest. Or even someone who is, you know, maybe not so much. Either or, even with the ones who are maybe not so much into serial killers, when you ask them, okay, when you say the word serial killer, most people think of Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, Ed Gein.
Somebody, oh yeah.
Every once in a while, more times than not, I believe, Gary Ridgway doesn't come up a whole lot.
That's surprising.
It is surprising because he is said to be the second most prolific serial killer in the United States, according to confirmed murders.
Yeah, it was 48.
48 confirmed, mm-hmm. Yes.
They said that he could possibly be
he stated that
guilty
in some
of
interviews.
71.
Yeah, he well, he said a couple different things. In one interview, after he was finally arrested. In one interview, he said that it, you know, it was upwards, you know, like 60 or 50, 52 in the 50s. Another one said 71.
Right.
The consensus is that he said, you know, 71 versus, because that's where I'm seeing in all the research that I've done on him. Usually 71 is what he says he did, but right, not confirmed. 48 confirmed.
Right.
And a lot of these are by bone fragments and things like that. I mean, it's...
That was over 20 years before they found him.
Wow, 20 years. You know, how does somebody even get away with that? And he was married 3 times.
Yep.
Throughout this whole thing. I mean, he killed, let's see, it was again in the state of Washington during the 80s and 90s. And of course, like we see with a lot of serial killers, they were prostitutes.
Yeah.
I mean, going all the way back to Jack the fucking Ripper.
And he said, because they were easy.
They were. Well, that's why they're prostitutes.
Yeah, no.
Well, I mean,
not that kind of easy.
Oh, all right.
Like, they're just easy targets.
Oh, they are. They are.
Most of the time, people, I mean, they see it in their mind's eye that they don't have people that care about them, or
right,
they're not going to be reported missing, or.
Yes. Oh, yeah, right. They could just fall off the face of the earth, basically. And, you know, especially the cops. The cops right, aren't really going to put a whole lot of manpower into a few, you know, streetwalkers dying. When the numbers get that big, yeah, you almost have to, you know, start paying attention.
Right.
And that happened. And a lot of these weren't just prostitutes.
Right.
There were some, you know, underage runaways. You know, they, you know, he ended up getting his cool little nickname. You would think he would have been like the Streetwalker Killer. or something like that. No. The good old press is the, yeah, you know, they're the ones that kind of gave him that nickname,
Green River Killer,
after 5 bodies were pulled out of the Green River.
Right, because he started to, like, disposing of them in different places.
Right.
It wasn't just at the Green River.
Sure.
And they said that he was doing it in, like, pockets.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he'd go back and, you know, he'd put them in, like, clumps and clusters. Yep. And put a few here. And then over here, he'd put a few more.
Didn't they say that it had something to do with, so he, in like, when he would go places, he would go in route of the place that he buried bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Just so he could go past them.
Yeah, yeah, right. And they do that a lot of times to relive that experience. And he went back, he said in a couple of his interviews, he went back and did the old on one of them. And some of the ones that were put in the Green River.
Mm-hmm.
This is just getting into a little bit of, you know, how bad this guy was.
Right.
Because I know we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, because we probably should preface on how he, you know, some of the things that happened in his life that pushed him to get this way.
Yeah.
But I have to say this. This guy took and put what was said to be triangular-shaped rocks, or just rocks. There's an article I may or may not bring up regarding religious and spiritual items that some say, were religious, and because he was, yeah, in a sense.
They said that he got extremely religious after his second wife.
Yes, and so... there were at least 8 victims that had religious symbols and type things that were at, you know, some of these grave sites. And he would literally stick rocks in their vagina,
yep,
to cause them to sink, yep, and not, you know, float up and be spotted to hopefully get down where he couldn't, right, be seen.
So then his dumbass doesn't think the fact that they can't collect DNA off that because it holds his semen in.
Oh, man. So, but let's go back a little bit and just try and get a little overview on how little Gary was. Again, he was born in 49, as I mentioned, 71 now. Well, not now. Is that right? Yeah, 71. And he was born in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he was the middle child of his mother, Mary, and his dad, Thomas. They had three sons. He was the middle. And, of course, like with a lot of serial killers, you know, troubled home life, you know, his mom was very domineering. Oh, you know, where we heard this story before, one Edmund Kemper.
Yep.
And probably numerous other ones, you know, over, and it's always the overbearing mother. You don't hear too much. There are some out there. I think Dahmer's dad was a little bit, you know, I mean, it was, he did some kind of questionable things with young Jeffrey, in that story. But it's normally the mother who is really overbearing, kind of like you.
Yeah.
He didn't like that shit. It, you know, of course there was, you know, some fighting back and forth, between him and his mom. I think his mom was kind of was she a stay at home wife, mother?
I think so. I think they never say anything about her working.
Yeah. I know his father drove a, bus.
Yeah.
And, I'm assuming, you know, like a transit bus, like through the city type deal.
Probably.
And, because it's said that his father had a really, really, you know, he had some disdain for some of the prostitutes in that area. Because apparently his bus went down, I think it's Pacific Highway. We'll come to that here in a little bit. But which was the strip there in Kings County or King County. That all the streetwalkers would hang out. You can get your dope there and your dick sucked all in two blocks, you know. And so, you know, his dad has said to, you know, and like bitched a lot about this. Maybe that sparked, you know, a little bit of hatred for the oldest profession in mankind.
Yeah.
And not that I'm, you know, I've never visited one. No, see him all the time. Not here. It's going to be a prostitute in this place. moving ahead a little bit in young Gary's life, he's about 13. He was a bedwetter. Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle.
Yep.
He was. He was all the way up till 13. Now here comes the weird part.
That we know of.
That we know of. It could have been later.
He could still be a bedwetter.
He still could be. 78 years old.
71.
Still can't do the math. Still can't get that right. Here's the weird part. This is where his mom gets a little overbearing and gets a little kind of weird. And this starts developing feelings that Gary has about his mom that cover both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, love and hate. And his mom would wash his genitals.
Yep. Every time he peed a bed.
And he'd wash his naughty spot. He's 13 years old. Yep. Possibly older, like you said. And he can't even wash his own, you know, twig and berries?
Did it as a punishment.
That is weird because it was a punishment of sort because it really fucked him up. Really fucked him up. Because, like I said, he got almost a sexual attraction to his mom. Did it say that he got a hard on?
Yeah, watching her sunbathe.
Oh, watching her sunbathe. Yeah. That's where that whole sexual attraction, you know, started. He mentions in his own words. And then he gets his, on the other side of the spectrum, he has this hatred for making him feel inferior because she would lambaste, she would just come down on him harder and shit. Come on, you know, babies pee the bed. When are you going to grow up, you know, stupid face, bedwetting Gary? Yeah,
that's what she said.
I don't know. And, you know, it wasn't long after that You know, he's feeling this anger and sexual attraction. Yeah. Anger to the point where he starts fantasizing about wanting to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
In the same breath, he also wants to doink her.
Yep.
That's just weird anyway. Okay.
That's pretty much how it is to be married.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. He wasn't very good in school. He mentions himself, and I would absolutely suggest anybody listening go and track down some of these interviews that he gives with the FBI profile or the behavioral, profile type chick.
Yeah.
You know what she does? She's like behavioral, you know, you're trying to get into his head and get him to come out, and we'll get into a little bit of that. But, I would really suggest go back and listen to some of these because it was interesting. He was said to be dyslexic, and that in turn got him held back. Possibly could have been part of that, him being held back because he wasn't a very good student,
right?
And he was held back in high school. Of course, again, his mother would always come down on him, just really overbearing. He was about 16 or so. I think this says 16, but his own word states that he was in about seventh grade, which makes him about 13, 14 years old, give or take when his birthday was.
Depending on if he...
In February.
Never failed.
What?
So depending on if he never failed.
Failed.
If he was slow, he may have failed a grade.
Yeah, very true. Well, he was held back in high school, so I don't know if he was held back, then. But this says when he was 16. We heard him say when he was about 13, 14, stabbed a six-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Just he coerced him into the woods. Just nothing better to do. Coerced him into the woods and stabbed him twice. Got him through the ribs and into his liver.
Yep.
And then just walked away.
Yep. Told him that he wanted to see what it felt like to kill somebody.
Right. And the boy never died. He didn't die. They say miraculously, because we're only talking about a six-year-old kid here getting stabbed, you know.
In the woods.
In the woods.
It has to be found.
Right. So it was pretty miraculous that he did survive. Ridgway wasn't a bright character. He was not a smart guy.
Brutal.
He was not a smart guy at all. The brief reference to Edmund Kemper earlier. Edmund, on the other hand, of the IQ scale, was damn near genius.
Yeah.
I mean, just a few points below Einstein.
Right.
And
he wouldn't have got caught if he wouldn't have decided to turn himself in.
Exactly. He turned himself in. Yeah, he had a good little stretch, too. But Ridgway, on the other hand, he's pretty dumb.
Yeah.
He wasn't very smart. His IQ test hovered around the low 80s.
Oh, my jeez.
Yeah, he's borderline fucking retarded. No, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody with a low IQ, because you're listening to one.
And you are borderline.
You got that right. Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, let's move ahead a little bit. His marriages, his first marriage to Claudia Craig. He married her right out of high school in 1969 and married. She was 19. It was his girlfriend at the time. Yeah. He joins the Navy. He's going to turn his fucking life around. He figures, you know, I can't stab six-year-old kids all the time.
Right.
I can't make a career out of this. Little did he know.
Yeah.
His potential has not yet been reached. He goes to the Navy, sent to Vietnam. And he pretty much served his deal there on a supply ship. Saw a little combat. And when they would port, he'd go in there and get him some hookers. And I think this might have been right around the first time that he started really fucking around with, you know, prostitutes. Not a good first time. Ends up with gonorrhea.
Yep.
And I think he also maybe got syphilis or something. I thought it might have been something else, too. But gonorrhea for sure. And even though he's pissed off, just imagine. Here's the mindset of this guy in the Navy with a 80, maybe mid-80s by this point, IQ. Gets gonorrhea. in Vietnam. That's got to be some dirty hooch over there.
Something.
And he gets gonorrhea. He's angry. Damn it! I got gonorrhea because I didn't use protection.
Yep.
Well, oh well, I'm going to go back and do it again. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Well, yep. He succeeded, and he wanted more and more and more. When he came back to the States, he learned that his wife had an extramarital affair. I know, damn her. She can't be faithful. Yeah, I know. Poor Gary's over there, serving his country. He's fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he gets a little lonely, but it's not like he can just, come on. I'm sorry. I'll play devil's advocate here. But, yeah, she has an extramarital affair. Their marriage, kapooey, within a year. Didn't even last a year. First two marriages actually ended in divorce because of infidelity on both sides. Not just Gary. Huh. Yeah. Yeah, so get off your high horse, ladies. His second wife, she started claiming physical abuse. Him putting her in chokeholds and such.
And I believe it.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he did. That was kind of his...
That was his thing.
That was his thing. you can't take a good thing away from a serial killer. All of them have their things. Dahmer was, eating his people.
Yeah.
And, Gary, he was a choker.
Yeah.
Yeah, some women like that. Nothing. Nothing crickets.
Yeah, fucking that's crickets. Exactly what you got.
Fucking crickets. Right around this time during his second wife's marriage, while he's choking her and soliciting the services of sex workers, he becomes very religious.
Yep.
And this is where I want to break away from the story a little bit and mention a little bit of this, this article that actually came out. This is... Kitsap Sun, whatever. back in 1999, so it's an older article. Okay,
you think
just a little bit. This did not come out yesterday. And this is before they even caught him. This is before they arrested him.
Right.
He was apprehended in 2001.
Right.
This is 2 years. A clinical psychologist from Bellevue thinks he has found a pattern of clues that reveals the Green River Killer as a deadly religious fanatic.
Huh.
But the case investigator dismisses that theory. And this is why he thinks. This is some of the things getting this this here that I'm about to read from Wiki. He became religious during his second marriage. He was going door to door. Can you imagine that? Reading the Bible aloud at work and at home and insisting that his wife follow the strict teachings of their pastor. Ridgway would also frequently cry after sermons or reading the Bible.
He knew he was going to hell.
Right. Despite his belief, Ridgway continued to solicit the services of his sex walkers. And wanted his wife to participate in sex in public and in inappropriate places. So he had a little wild side to him. He wasn't even that way when he was a kid.
I bet he tried to get brother. I bet he tried to get her to have sex in church.
Wow, I didn't think about that.
Because
outside, that's where he wanted to do it. And that which brings it to pretty much the last part of this. That he would try to get her. Now, I don't know if he was successful, but he would take her to some of the places where he would later dump bodies or already dumped the bodies.
Her.
Yeah, and had sex with her right in that same area.
It was where he had already put bodies.
Yeah, because they found him later.
Yep.
That's just crazy. So that's just nuts. I mean,
going to heaven.
It's still not crazier than flying fucking snakes. Ed Shaw, or Shaw, I believe his name is pronounced, presented his theory Sunday to the American Psychological Association. He says, I don't have a right to insist that law enforcement take it seriously, but the families of the victims have a right to know. The Green River, that was the end of that quote, but the Green River killer is blamed for the deaths of as many as 49 women in the early 80s. Each article always has a, you know, yeah,
different number.
Different, always. Okay, he says, let's see. First, Shaw believes the five bodies found in the Green River, which we had mentioned, south of Seattle, were put there as some sort of a post-mortem baptism. Interesting theory.
Yeah.
That is pretty interesting. Also, at least two victims had triangular-shaped rocks, a symbol of the Trinity, placed in their bodies.
Oh, wow.
I'm thinking these are possibly the ones that went up the hoo-hoo.
Well, how would they know they were symbols if they were in the hoo?
Well, I'm sure they got them out. Oh, I don't know. Good question. Jesus, stop me dead in my tracks. Back the truck up. All right. And here's one. Another victim.
Just pulling out full symbols.
Right. I mean, like triangular rocks. Come here.
Pull out a whole cross.
Man, right. You know, we have a rosary. Here's a Gideon's Bible. Another victim was left with two cleaned fish. All right. And from what I understand, I don't think this article is exactly accurate, because it was said that she had two fish. They were cleaned. And one kind of laying on both of her shoulders, almost like a scarf of dead fish. And then she has in her hand an empty bottle of wine, her hands crossed. On top of her hand was grounded ground beef or some sort of meat product, okay, which is basically what they say here. Yeah, she had two clean fish. That's symbols of Christ.
Okay.
Okay. Left next to her were a wine bottle and some raw meat. Symbols of the Eucharist. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The blood and body of Christ.
Oh, wow. So what do the fish represent?
That's Christ.
Oh.
Duh. Come on, man. You Satan? Apparently. Probably got flying fucking snakes. You're going to get as a pet. All right. So, what do you think about that? I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought the most interesting part was the baptism. I thought that maybe held the most, you know, credence in that theory. The dead fish thing and the symbols in the Coochie.
I was trying not to laugh, but my favorite is the being able to pull the whole symbol out of the vagina.
Right. I mean,
that's work. That takes dedication.
Oh, man. All right. Well, aside from that.
Blueprints.
Oh, my God. You got a map to the Ark of the Covenant. All right. Wow. That was good. I don't even know what that was. Probably something I shouldn't be playing.
Probably not.
I'm hitting sound pad buttons and probably shouldn't. But here's the upside to Mr. Gary. Even though he has all of these weird things. Oh, and on top of that, the girl who had the fish and a thing, she had a paper bag over her head.
Oh, wow.
And she had like one shoe on, one shoe off, or you know, shit was just placed very strategically. It was odd, to say the least. He's quite the ladies' man. I mean, I know he's you know, picked up.
He's picking up whores.
Well, of course. All right, but they're easy. No, according to the women in his life, on a personal note, he had an insatiable sexual appetite.
Apparently.
Several different girlfriends, demand sex from them several times a day. When does this guy work? Lord. All right, let's get into some. He did have a son by his second wife. His name's Matthew.
Yeah, that he had to go on one of his trips to kill somebody.
A ruse.
Had him sit in the car while he took her out in the woods.
Yeah. Very crazy. Well, you want to know why he did that? Do you know why he did this?
Brought his son?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Just listen to this.
You went to a lot of work to create these ruses. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like you had a series.
No, she says ruses.
Right.
She's cruising for a ruses.
Series of ruses that you had kind of in your hip pocket. Mm-hmm. That you would bring out and you would use to make you appear normal to some of these women.
Mm-hmm. I can only assume that you know, most people probably know what, you know, maybe a ruse is.
Yeah.
If not, it is basically something that you use to deceptively, is that right?
Yeah.
Deceptively coerce or lure someone to you. You're kind of lying to him by saying, hey, I'm a good guy. Look at pictures of my son.
Yeah, well, and plus he said, too, that some of them would ask for him to show him his ID.
A lot of them would.
Which, if you're going to get killed, he wouldn't give a shit if he showed you his ID. That's just the dumbest thing ever.
Right. You want to take a selfie? On Facebook. Bitch. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
But they ask him that if he has any ruse that he pulls out when he's stalking these ladies. But he has to be, well, when he approaches these ladies. But is it something, is he stalking them too? Does he have his sights out? The reason I'm asking is because how would he know?
What
he can, I mean, she just made it seem so simple that he just knew what to use on these ladies.
Well, right. Well, all he was trying to do was, which he'll describe the things that he did, which I think this is important. No, this doesn't get into, you know, a specific, you know, killing and him talking about that. But I think it's really important, as I mentioned before, for, you know, the listeners to go and watch some of these interviews. Hear it come from the horse's mouth. Now, could be lying. He's a psychopath. And psychopaths are known to fucking lie a lot. They're pathological fucking liars.
Yep.
But he was just trying to make himself look normal and, you know, just very benign.
Right.
Type deal. And it worked.
Yeah.
This is how we do it.
And there had to be a way of you deciding, even though it was just like that, which ruse would work with which woman. I mean, you had to have a way of feeling them out. And
is this kind of what you were talking about?
Yeah.
Saying,
he's going to answer it for you.
One, two, three will work with this woman. Explain that process to me.
Well, one of them was, a woman would get in the car.
My God, slow down.
She's in the car. Let's say she's always in the car, driving down the road. And she wants to see my ID. So I whipped out my ID, and with my ID would be I'd put my finger over my driver's license to hide my name.
Smart.
And on the opposite side was pictures. And a picture of my son.
So he basically just trying to make himself look like a normal family guy who just maybe is in kind of a shady, shaky marriage, just out having some fun.
Needs some ass.
Yeah, just needs some strange, you know, on the corner walking up and down that, you know, everybody's had.
Yeah.
You know? And that kind of makes him think, because this is going through, I mean, he's got to do this after he's already killed these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
After it's already, you know, that area is in hysterics trying to figure out where are all these girls going?
Yeah.
Why are there 50, you know, fucking, you know, missing girls?
Yep.
Just vanishing. And he's still out there, you know, all you got to do is just, and they'll come up to your fucking car. Hey, babe, you know, and it's real easy. Hop in. And what they'll ask is like, you know, do you date?
Yep.
You don't say you want sucky for 2020. No, do you date? Yes, yep. I date. Okay, then hop in. Let's go on a date. And yeah, but you wish you had dinner in a movie. Jesus. Right, let's hear a little bit more of this. We'll see where this goes.
And then she'd see my son, and they would know I was a probably normal person.
But you were really using your son as part of your ruse.
Ruse. See? Cruising for a ruse.
Yes. At the time, I didn't want to picture my ex-wife there, so I had to have a picture of my son.
Sure, you had to...
Come on, that's kind of funny to me. I don't want a picture of my ex-wife there. You know, you don't want a picture of another woman is basically what he's saying.
Right.
You know, you want a picture of, you know, a little boy. He went as far, and he mentions, he goes as far as taking some of his son's toys. And I'll leave the shocker, which you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are going to remember, but he's going to talk about that.
Listen. You had to make it sound good.
I had a driver's license on one side, my ID, and then when I showed my... And then the next picture was my son, so that was... And,
look at daddy's boy.
In the vehicle, I had some, always had some, not always, but had some of my son's stuff in there, you know, that he left in there, or some Star Wars or something like that. You know, so there was like a family setting.
I'm a good guy. Don't you see fucking a Chewbacca? You see Chewbacca?
Oh my God.
You see fucking Chewbacca and Han Solo in the back seat, bro? I'm cool. That's all it took.
Yeah. Dumb bitches.
In your vehicle.
Yeah, so every time I opened up my wallet, there would be a picture of my son on one side, you know. Behind my ID, here's my ID. I hide my name, flip it over, and there's my ID and my sense
of
picture.
Didn't he just say this?
Yeah.
On the back side, and they'd see that, and that would lower any big defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kids' toys, 8-year-old toys on the dash.
The only thing that would be better than that would be to have your son in the car with you.
Oh, shit.
That would be an incredible...
Tell him what's
risk.
Up, G-Man.
That happened once.
What happened?
It was July 18th, I think it was my brother's birthday. That weekend, I picked up a woman on back highway, and Matthew was next to me in the seat, and she hopped in, and I took her over to in the South Airport area, and took her into an area, and my son was there, and I killed her. I'm real sure my son didn't see it.
Did he say he's pretty sure?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure my son didn't see it.
I mean, he said it was his brother's birthday, right?
Yeah.
And he was going to the birthday party? Is that what it was? Or coming back from
didn't
the birthday
really
party?
Say whether
it,
he was
it did,
back.
But he just said it was his brother's birthday. He's out cruising with his boy. Decides, just going to pick his fucking prostitute up. Yeah. Take her out in the woods. Son, little Matthew. Stay in the fucking car.
I'll be right back.
Daddy's going to... And then I think he told his son. I don't know if he says it here, but I did see in this interview, or one of them, he tells his son that he took and he had to show her a way home.
Yeah.
He was showing her, you know, a path through the woods or something. But he's pretty sure Matthew didn't see Daddy kill this fucking woman.
Right.
Wouldn't it be funny if that was the fish and wine woman?
Only happened one time.
But that was a pretty good ruse.
This woman and her ruse, she is really cruising for a rusing.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
So why
good.
Didn't you do it again?
I mean, because, I mean, he's a psychopath, but he's not crazy. He's not dumb. Well, okay, that don't work either. All right, tell us why, Gary. Why didn't you do it more than once? It means it worked so fucking well.
Well, for one thing, I didn't want my son to see that happen again, because I was it was that's when I was really killing a lot of them. And
he said I was really killing a lot of them.
Yeah, there was too many. And sooner or later, if little Matthew would have came with me on any more of these father-son expeditions,
he would have caught on.
He'd have figured it out sooner or later because Daddy was a full-timer.
Yeah.
Another thing, it never came to an opportunity again to do it. I had him in my truck one time. He was sleeping, and I picked up another prostitute, but I didn't date her.
Okay.
I didn't date her.
He didn't date her.
Does that mean he didn't kill her?
No, he didn't. He didn't do anything with her. That's what they mean.
I know. So did he just let her go?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he just gave her a ride to the corner store. Oh, fuck, I don't know.
Dropped her off at the next corner.
There's some interesting little things that I want to get into this. Again, these are some of the things that we think are important.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are just too many, way too many. If you go to murderpedia.org and search for Gary Ridgway, Murderpedia, if you like to learn about these morbid shit like we do, mm-hmm. it's a really good place to go. It is your serial killer Wikipedia,
yeah,
if you will. And they pull from all kinds of different sources, and a lot of work goes into this, you can tell. And you can go to their victims tab under Gary Ridgway when you get to that page. And the list is just, it goes on and on. And they tell you every single one.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much all 48 of them. And he was pretty consistent, as we said. Methods was strangulation. One woman got strangled with her own underwear.
Yeah.
There was sometimes he would just, he'd get them like in a headlock, get them from behind like a headlock, choke them out that way.
Mm-hmm.
He would, sometimes use, what they call it, ligatures. Did I say that right? A rope.
Oh. I was like, huh?
Let's put it that way, a rope. And, horrible, horrible guy. But that was his thing.
Yeah.
He started to, in the early 80s, Seattle, by this point, I think there was roughly, early 80s, it's not really date specific, but I would say 82, 83, they had probably 30 to 40 missing girls, mm-hmm. It was just, I think they had already pulled bodies out of the Green River. That was let me double check that. That was the first five that they pulled out. We can go through a couple of those at least, because those are the most notable ones. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that gave him the name, the Green River Killer. Wendy Lee Caulfield, she was 16 years of age and was last seen July 8th, 1982, in the Tacoma, Washington area. Her body was found in the Green River under the Peck Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge is located where the Frager Road and Kent Des Moines Road intersect in Kent, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we all know where that's at.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah Lynn Bonner was 23 years old. And she had been missing since July 15th, 1982, from South 216th Street and Pacific Highway South.
Oh.
That's where all the hookers were.
Yep.
Pacific Highway. And just south of the SeaTac Airport there in Seattle, her body was found on my birthday.
Yep.
August 12th, 1982.
You're 10.
When little Otis was celebrating his 10th year being alive, they were dragging Deborah Bonner's body out of the Green River.
Yep.
And here I am.
You're reincarnated.
37 years later, and I'm talking about her. She was pulled out then. And then we have 3 days later, I mean, because they were pulling him out left and right. 3 days later, a Marsha Chapman, 31 years old, she was last seen leaving her home right there at Pacific Highway South, not far from Deborah's place, August 1st, 82. And as I mentioned, 3 days later, on the 15th, she was pulled out of the Green River. And then we have Cynthia Hines, 17 years old. She was last seen the day before my birthday. And she was also pulled out the very same day as Marsha on the 15th. And actually, there were three bodies pulled out that day. Busy, busy day at the Green River on August 15th. Opal Mills, 16 years old, and last spoke with her family August 12th. And made a when she made a collect call, from down there around 190 something street, where all of them seem to hang out, and Pacific Highway South.
Yeah. And that's a popular corner.
That is a very, very popular corner. And those were the five that were pulled out. Again, we'd be here forever, trying to go through every single last one, but you can find them on Murderpedia. Now, when they pulled these people out, there was a guy that they nabbed first. He was their A1 prime suspect. And I'm talking about 43-year-old taxi driver Melvin Wayne Foster. And here's the thing. This is a article from the Seattle Times, came out in 2003, two years after Gary was apprehended. He had a little rocky past that the cops probably knew about. Again, he's 43 years old, drove a taxi up and down that same stretch. Right. He was in that area. I've been married five times, so he's not good with relationships. he'd done a little stint in prison, auto theft, and grown up just right there in South King County. He got a hold of the cops because he wanted to give them information about the Green River murders. Now, this is strange, but not all that strange, because Edmund Kemper, again, I keep bringing this up, but he would go and sit in bars, bar called the Jury Room, and sit and listen to cops. He was a polite nuisance or something like that, they said he was. That's all he wanted to do was you know,
get involved.
Get them some information. This Foster guy. After the first few bodies were found, Foster started thinking about his fellow cabbies. And thinking that maybe one of them could be it. So, as a cabbie, listen to this. Foster frequently came in contact with prostitutes both in downtown Seattle and on the Seattle-Tacoma Airport Strip, or SeaTac. After the first bodies were found, Foster began thinking about some of his fellow drivers. He decided to tell the police about his suspicions. What did that do? That promptly made him their prime suspect. But it turned out to be a little bit of a mistake.
Right.
Although it was compelling, and I can see why they would think that this guy...
I mean, they did give him a lie detector test, and he failed.
And he failed, okay? He states that he was... where's that? That he has a nervous... disorder or something like that, almost like a nervous tic that will cause him to fail these tests.
Now
one way that, you know, they would you know, find out, I guess it registers on this, you know, saying that here it is. Foster insisted throughout that he had nothing to do with the crimes. He told police that he had a nervous condition that made it impossible for him to pass polygraph tests. I'm pretty sure I've seen polygraph tests done.
Right.
Real life polygraph tests. And they'll ask you simple question. What's your name?
Right.
Something that you should not feel nervous about saying. And that would let them know if it's going to come through deceptive, right. If there is an issue, a condition that will cause you to, you know, throw out, you know, a false positive or whatever. Finally, in late 1985, the FBI told the Green River Task Force, which was put together in 1980,
mm-hmm.
That they told them detectives that Foster was almost certainly not their man. They couldn't believe it.
Right.
Because they thought they had this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dead to rights. They thought they had him. And that, he said, had it not been for the FBI's psychological profile, Foster might never have been a suspect in the first place. When Foster first came to see them in September of 1982, King County police were particularly interested in talking to people who wanted to, quote unquote, help them.
Right.
The FBI told investigators that wanting to assist the police was a frequent psychological trait of serial murderers.
Huh.
So, if there's a serial killer and you're asked to, you know, answer and help the cops, don't do it.
Right.
You're a suspect.
Yep.
When Foster said that he had not known the, they took a closer look at Foster's background and were especially interested in his time in prison. His admitted whatever. I'm not even going to try that word. He has a fondness for relationships with younger women.
Right.
And his cab driver's proximity to many of those involved in prostitution. He was right there. He was in the area. He had a fondness for this that made him kind of suspicious. Then he said he had not known the first five Green River victims, and the polygraph test indicated that he might be lying. They were even more suspicious.
Right.
He said, fuck your nervous condition. We got your ass. Then Foster flip-flopped and said that he had known the victims. He said that he had just become confused between their names and photographs. He's acting very suspicious.
Yeah.
He's going back and forth. He also said in an interview that I watched here recently that he would also take and he would sometimes give them free rides. He would let them sit in his cab out of the rain. He would bring them clothes. He said he even paid some of their rent. Some of these prostitutes rent when they weren't having a good night, you know, slinging the old hoo-ha. Next thing you know, hey, don't worry. Uncle Melvin's going to pay for this. And he said he would. He was just like apparently trying to be a nice guy. He was
wow.
He was being a little, he's just kind of being suspicious.
Yeah.
But by this time, the police were convinced, as the article goes on, that Foster was the killer, but he would not confess. There was also another problem. There's no evidence.
Yep.
So long story short, what they did, they began extensive surveilling of him, 24 hours. And that happened about mid-September 1982. Watched him like a fucking hawk. Every move he made, guess what? They were still prostitutes missing.
Yep.
They were starting to scratch their head a little bit. We've been watching this guy. This guy's not doing anything. There's still prostitutes and runaways coming up missing. Who's to blame now?
Right.
So they do something. What they do is they send a an undercover or whatnot. He decides he wants to sell his car. And so they have a undercover go and buy this car from him, from an ad that he put in the paper. Slap, like, I don't know, $3,000 down, boom, here you go.
Yep.
They take the car and they pull it apart with a fine-tooth comb.
Yep, find a handprint in the trunk.
Yeah. He eventually had to be let go.
Yep.
And had to be taken off. Do we know why he was taken off?
No.
No, I don't either.
That's your pop quizzing me.
Yeah, I know. No, basically because they really had, I mean, it got to the point where, yes, he acted suspicious.
Right.
Gary Ridgway was about 82. When did he fail the polygraph or pass the polygraph test? When was that? 84.
Yeah, 84.
I think it was 1984. They gave Ridgway a polygraph because there was an incident with a prostitute where, you know, there was a little bit of bickering back and forth between the streetwalker and Ridgway.
Yep.
A little argument ensued.
Yeah, because he said she scratched him.
She scratched him, yeah. She claimed she did not. He got angry, she pretty much took off and left. And then picked Ridgway out. 100%, she said. She said, I will never forget his face. And picked him out of a lineup of about 5 to 8 guys.
Yep.
And that got people.
This is a 92?
No. Was it that late?
I know it was later.
I don't know if it's that.
Because that's when it started unraveling that it really was him.
Right. Because in 84, yeah, he passed the polygraph test.
Yeah, because it was Rebecca, is it Gardier or something? She's the one who made the complaint against him.
Yes, yes. They didn't have, obviously, they didn't have DNA type technologies and whatnot as they do now. Back then, in the mid '80s, early '90s, what happened? They took a he took some DNA from him.
Mm-hmm.
They still had.
Well, they found the semen too.
Well, on the symbol.
Yeah.
I did there.
Yep.
They had some trace evidence, little spheres of paint.
He willingly gave them DNA.
Yeah. And they took a swab, and then when the capabilities to examine these came about, they did that in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yep.
And they found these little spheres of paint.
Yep.
Now, Gary, for I think about 30 years, worked at
Kenworth.
Yes, he would paint decals on the sides of big rigs and whatnot. And they found spheres of the same paint. They were able to narrow this paint down to where it was used. Paint apparently has a certain DNA too.
Yeah,
and you can trace that all the way back.
And it was a certain time of tape, type of paint that only Kenworth used.
Right, right, exactly. And, so they were able to take it back to that, and lo and behold, Gary Ridgway's there.
Yep.
And it's all right around the same time.
Yep.
And that was enough evidence right there to put him at quite a few of these murders.
Yeah.
And they got their warrant. Met him after work outside, and he has been incarcerated ever since.
Yep.
That was in 2001. A few more small details in here that I'm going to bring up. Again, there's so much more to this.
Right.
But we only have a certain amount of time. We've already gone kind of over our normal hour limit, but there's just so much to talk about. And we could probably go on for, maybe about another 5 minutes before I pass out from the heat.
It's hot.
Early 2000, what am I even going to read here?
Are you getting delirious now?
Yeah. The plea bargain.
Oh, yeah.
There was a plea bargain that he put forth, his attorneys, his defense team put forth to the prosecution that, okay, look, you take away the death penalty, and I'll tell you
where
all the bodies are. And I will lead you. I'll confess to these murders.
Which for like 6 months, he just kept leading them on a wild goose chase.
Oh, man, they were getting pissed, too.
Because they were taking him on field trips.
Yeah, they call them field trips. That's funny. That's just so funny to me. Field trips was just like such a happy time when you were.
Well, I guess when you're in prison and you get out, regardless of how you're getting out or why you're getting out, I guess, yeah.
Well, yeah.
It'd be considered a good time.
I guess that kind of would be. They agreed to it. Yeah. They signed pretty much a contract saying, you're going to do this. You're going to give up this information that we ask of you. No questions asked.
Yep.
And we'll take the death penalty off the table. We'll take that off. And like you said, that went on and on and on for
a while.
A while.
And then he did finally start giving up.
He did. It took a behavioral
specialist
from the FBI and had her come in. That was who you heard talking, actually, in that little clip that, that we played. She come in and she'd break him down.
Yep.
She and just talking about his mom and his son. He got a little choked up there, even talking about how he would show these whores as, you know, his well, I shouldn't say that's kind of disrespectful, you know. So you know, the streetwalkers, picture of his son, he kind of got a little choked up. She said he cried on numerous occasions talking about his mom. So it was kind of to break him down.
Yep.
And it worked. And it worked. He started taking him to, certain burial sites. They started finding bones, and the list just went on and on and on.
Yep.
It is, again, it's a very, very, he got Judge Richard Jones sentenced Ridgway to 48 life sentences.
Wow.
With no possibility of parole and one life sentence to be served consecutively. He also was sentenced to an additional 10 years for tampering with evidence for each of the 48 victims,
Holy
adding
crap.
480 years to his 48 life sentences.
Jesus.
I think it's safe to say he's not getting out.
Not anytime soon.
He did lead prosecutors to three bodies.
Right.
Now, before he was caught, I do have to bring this up because this is what's so intriguing to me about Gary Ridgway in this case. Another serial killer.
Oh, yeah.
Comes into the picture. And yep. I almost forgot about this, and I don't know how I could do that. Comes into the picture. Yep. One, Ted Bundy.
Yep.
Robert Keppel was the detective. I think he might have been working sheriff. He was a sheriff at the time of the Bundy case, or he might have been a detective. He worked on that case.
Right.
He also was one of the head detectives, along with Reichert. I can't remember. David Reichert. Those were the two main guys heading this task force. All of a sudden, they get a letter. Now, Bundy's on death row at this point. He's not going much longer. He's only got three or four years before he is fried up.
Yep.
And I don't know if he just wanted his last little,
No, he wanted a stay of execution. He wanted him
exactly.
to stop it.
Right. And that was not going to work.
No.
That was not going to work at all. So he writes a letter to Keppel and some of the other detectives stating that, he can help them. Almost profile the killer that they're still looking for at that time. They didn't know it was, Ridgway at
right.
the time. He tells them that, look where he's dumping these bodies. You know, he's going to go back. They're like his trophies. He may go back and have sex with them. Next time you find a fresh dead body, stake him out. Stake out. He's trying to help him catch a fucking serial killer. Now, some reports say that the information that Bundy gave him didn't really do much of anything. It gave him a glimpse into the mind of one serial killer talking about another one. They're thinking there might be some validity to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not really the case. Some reports say, yes, it did help them. It was actually the DNA evidence.
Right, that concreted everything.
Exactly. It wasn't Bundy, but I did have to mention that. Because I don't know of any other serial killer who has ever been caught or whatnot, by another, not really by it, or one serial killer working with agents.
Yeah.
For
to catch
whatever,
another serial killer.
Yeah, to catch help them catch another. I don't know of any other case like that.
Right.
So, there you have it. I'm about winded. Hopefully this did this justice, Chad. Went about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Over our normal time, but that's all right. There was actually so much more we could have, talked about when it comes to this. But I'll have some links in the description where, you know, you can check out some of the clips that we used here, especially the flying fucking snakes.
Mm-hmm.
This is horrible. I'm having nightmares. God, I'm having nightmares. It's going to be so bad. I'm going to cry.
I'll give you a sedative.
I need a sedative. Wake up! Need a dose of yellow spring or stat. All right, Mr. Dreads, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, we're gonna get the hell out of here. Remember, nightoftheliving.dreads.com, No Way in Dreads, Spotify, Stitcher. Tell your friends. Tell them all, even the ones you hate. <I don't... laughs> All right, we'll talk to you here very soon.
No one knows. We're going to die.